Coming up this week on the Braves Beach House podcast, Patrick is joined by Braves alumni Bruce Benedict as they had a sit-down interview before the autograph signing in Welland Park. And we'll wrap up the episode, talk about the latest news and events here at Coola Day Park. All that and more ahead on this episode of the Braves Beach House podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Braves Beach House podcast. Today we're at the Farmers Market at Welland Park, not too far from Coola Day Park, where I'm here with Mr. Bruce Benedict, who's been here this morning signing some autographs of some old cards. Lots of old fans coming up to see you, some Braves fans in there. How was your morning out here with us in Southwest Florida?
Well, the morning's been absolutely spectacular. The weather's just great. The market's fantastic. People are going up and down, seeing the different vendors. And of course, we had a Braves booth set up, and it was great to have all the people come by and, recite their favorite team and their players and their stats, where they came from. All the while, they were getting an autograph and getting some pictures and taking pictures with me and everything. So it's been a very pleasurable morning, and it was really a pleasure to meet everybody here. Everybody is just having a great time and enjoying the morning.
We always appreciate you being around, and that 11-year career with the Atlanta Braves, certainly sharing your insight and knowledge means an awful lot to us. We've obviously got the All-Star Game coming up in Atlanta later this summer, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your All-Star experience. You made the team twice in 1981 and 1983 as a reserve, and went a combined 1-for-2, getting a base hit in the 1983 game. A couple of quick questions about that. What's something the average fan might not know about the All-Star Game experience, and what's that like from a player's perspective?
Well, in the 1981 game, I think I was the only Braves representative that year, and so I get to the team, and I'm not exactly sure of the right number, but I think I get to that team, and I think we had 11 future Hall of Famers on that team.
Unbelievable.
In 1981. So I was clearly the worst player on the team. but it was a wonderful experience to be around that type of player, that caliber of player, that all-star player, the way they carry themselves, and the way they went and approached the game, how to play it. They're very serious about it. I got to catch Bruce Sutter and Nolan Ryan in the game, which was obviously a big thrill for me, and we win that game.
Right.
So that was a lot of fun. I got one at bat in that game, and it was against Dave Steeb, who I think won the Cy Young Award that year for Toronto. I struck out in about 7 seconds. Didn't take very long. But the next game we got beat, it was in Chicago. It was the 50th anniversary of the All-Star Game, and we got beat in that game. Fred Lynn hit a grand slam homer against us, kind of got them on the board, and we never really were able to catch up. But I did get a hit in that game. I batted one time, and I got a base hit to right center field on the first pitch from longtime great reliever for the Kansas City Royals, Dan Quisenberry. And so got a hit. He never forgave me for getting a hit off of him. After that, he couldn't understand how I could possibly do that. But so 1-for-2 in All-Star games, but the thrill is to be around your peers for the day, get to know them a little bit, and you really felt a part of something very, very special, at least I did.
Right.
And to represent the Atlanta Braves wearing the Major League uniform was something, obviously, that I still talk about today after many, many years ago. Having a chance to do it.
That's special to hear you get to say that.
Very special.
And we're thinking about, some of those opposing players, getting to catch Nolan Ryan in the 1981 Midsummer Classic. Do you look at that as an opportunity to scout the opposition when you face them that maybe you'll use later on as a hitter, or does it ever give insight to how to work more effectively with the pitchers on your own team who might have similar arsenals to the ones you're catching that day?
Well, most of the pitchers that go there, they don't give up much. They don't really want to know or divulge their secrets of how they get somebody out or how they approach the game. They basically keep to themselves, but when it's their time to pitch, they want to be successful, and they don't want to get embarrassed. I remember catching Nolan Ryan. The first game was in Cleveland, and I threw the ball down to second base, and Nolan Ryan gives me the thing, he says, come out to the mound. So I go out to the mound, and he looks at me, and he goes, kid, he said, we're not getting embarrassed in this game, so you go back there and put one down for fastball and two for curve and see if you can get in the way of it. Now, he was dead serious about you know, his inning in that game.
Sure.
And like I said, they don't give away company secrets.
Right.
But they're there to enjoy the time and their teammates, and certainly they want to do when they get a chance to
participate. Something to that simplicity almost,
yeah.
too.
No, yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Well, speaking of your live arm, in 1981, you tied with Terry Kennedy for the lead runners and caught stealing, gunning down 48 lost souls on the base path. Last year, Will Smith led the NL with a much more modest 32. With the new base running rules, do you think we're going to start seeing that aspect of catcher defense receive a little more attention? And do you think we'll ever see numbers like we did back then?
Well, I don't think we're going to see those type of numbers. But I do think that the stolen base is coming back into play more and more and more. I think each year, you know, obviously they've made the bases bigger. There's some engagement rules. I mean, how many times you can step off and throw over. So I think that's enhanced the opportunities for the base stealers. And give them more of a successful chance to make it. So I do think those numbers are going to rise. Do I think they're going to get back to where it was when I played? I would say no, just because of the power aspect now. They rely more on the power. Back then, you know, if you get thrown out, you know, a lot of the numbers say that really, you know, hurt your chances of scoring that inning. So I can remember the Houston Astros, when we played again when I was with the Braves, I believe at one point, the Houston Astros had 7 players in their starting lineup with 20 or more stolen bases.
Wow.
So they were, and of course, the St. Louis Cardinals were big base stealers. The Montreal Expos with Dawson and Raines and Rodney Scott and players like that. So it was very much a part of the team's games back then. Not as much anymore. That's why I don't think the numbers, even though it's increased their chances to steal a base, I don't think we'll ever get back to those numbers, no.
In 1982, you tied an MLB record by gunning down 3 base runners in 1 inning. Do you remember that? And did y'all ever have pop times?
We did have some pop times then. It's probably a little more prevalent now. So throw out 3 base stealers in 1 inning. I think it's only been done one time,
yep,
in the history of Major League Baseball where you get 3 caught stealings in 1 inning. And one of my detractors said, well, they didn't think of much of your arm, you know, back then, you know, when you did. I said, well, they did when the inning was over.
All 3 outs.
And then, well, that's right. Yeah. They did when the inning was over. And yeah. I don't recall or hold me to it, but I think it was Dusty Baker, Kenny Landro, and Steve Sachs of the Dodgers. I think that's who it was, somebody. But I had forgotten about it until somebody brought it up to me. Certainly I bring that up, like I said, to my detractors or my golf buddies. We're right. Getting on my chipping and my putting.
Really?
So I bring that up to them every now and then.
What an unbelievable feat.
A lot of fun.
Cool, yeah. To be in the tied in the record book right there. That's really neat. Like many major leaguers, you followed up your playing career by sticking around in the game, a variety of capacities, roving instructor, manager, and even scout. But you also branched out a little bit and worked as a referee for Division I basketball. What led you to pursue that, and any special memories, any crazy college atmospheres that you were involved in?
Well, it started quite innocently because, obviously basketball is a wintertime activity, and I was mentioning to somebody, now that baseball's over, we're in the fall and the winter, I'm kind of looking for something to do. And one of my buddies said, well, why don't you get in to start refereeing basketball? So I started with grade school games and junior varsity games, college games. I went to 5 straight years. I went to what amounts to a referee camp to get hired. And I ended up refereeing Division I basketball for 30 years.
Unbelievable.
And I refereed in the Southeastern Conference for 25.
Okay.
And then I went on to referee in the Sun Belt Conferences, the Southern, and the Division II league my last 3 years, called the Peach Belt Conference. So it was a big portion of my life, you know, 33 years. But it fit just perfectly because it was wintertime, and then when basketball was over, obviously I went to spring training. So I got to go to the NCAA tournament 3 or 4 times, one of my biggest games. I was asked about earlier in the day. I got to do the Duke-Indiana game in Rupp Arena.
Unbelievable.
You know, one time, so that was good. One of my favorite venue by far is where Butler Bulldogs play. It's Hinkle Fieldhouse in Indianapolis, Indiana, and if most people will recall, Hinkle Fieldhouse is where they filmed Hoosiers, the movie Hoosiers. So that's my favorite venue to referee in. But there are a number of places, Rupp Arena in Tennessee, of course, Hinkle Fieldhouse in Indiana, that there are wonderful places to go. So they're great venues, a lot of excitement. And I enjoyed my college refereeing career as much as anything, and, mm-hmm. And still get a lot of conversation about it with my friends.
Very cool. And also talking about that scouting, you know, is there anything that you looked for as a scout or an analyst that other people in the industry tended to undervalue?
Well, it's changed now. It's changed now in the last, you know, I would say 5 to 8 years. They're relying more and more now on numbers and spin rates and different quadrants of the strike zone. You know, back then, we looked at raw power. We looked at hitting for power and hitting for average, arm strength, you know, how fast can you run stolen bases, contact, things like that. And generally, you know, the bottom line is, could you play the game? I think they look at it differently now. When I scouted, I always could feel like if I got to watch you play 5 to 6 to 7 games, I had a pretty good feel of what your chances were as a player moving forward.
Good
and if
sample
you could help,
size there.
Yeah. If yeah. you could help an organization. So they're going a little bit more numbers wise, but in a perfect world, I think you need both.
Right.
I think you need both. I can't really get on the numbers because, you know, that's the first thing I did when I got to the ballpark as a scout is you go to the press box and you get stats.
Right.
So I can't really bash the numbers that much.
It's a different form of analytics.
It's a different form of analytics, but the eye test. You know, the boots on the ground and butts in the seats to watch a guy play, how he handles certain situations, is he a leader on his club, what kind of pitching does he hit, if he's not playing, can he contribute to help you win a game if he's not hitting, whether it's with his defense or base running, those are all factors. His instincts for the game. The numbers really don't tell you much about a player's instinct.
Yeah,
and his heart and his soul. That's and what great. Kind of teammate he is. So you find out a lot about that when you go to the games in person.
We've talked a lot about baseball instincts on the podcast with former players, and so it's neat to hear once again you mentioning the baseball instincts.
No doubt. It's a big factor in playing the game. It's an instinctual game. There's no doubt about that. It's a technical game. But some guys just know how to play and know how to beat you. They figure it out. They figured it out.
That's a good way to put it. Who was a catcher you looked up to during your playing days and a catcher that you love to watch now?
Well, in one of the All-Star games, of course, Johnny Bench was an honorary captain, so I got a picture with him. I got a picture with him at the game, so it's great. So it's right on my desk, and obviously he's one of the, you know, the greatest of all time. And I think catchers now, I don't follow it as much now as far as catchers go. I'm a little disenchanted, you know, with today's catchers because they're laying on the ground. You know, they're laying on the ground and they're in one knee and they don't block the ball the way they used to block the ball. It's hard for them to throw people out. And certainly they've changed the receiving. You know, now they're trying to steal pitches by framing.
A lot of framing.
And they're moving their gloves, they're banging their gloves on the ground and they're trying to fool the umpires. Which was very much, we can say it on this podcast right now, which is very, very much taboo back in the day. Mm-hmm. You try to steal pitches or pull pitches in or whatever, that umpire would tap you on the shoulder and go, what are you doing?
Right.
What are you trying to embarrass me? So the game has changed quite a bit from that aspect. And, you know, they've taught all these catchers to try to steal pitchers and frame pitchers, catch the ball up and going down. The simplest way I tell everybody to do it, to learn how to do it, is just try to catch every pitch for a strike. Don't let the ball take your glove out of the strike zone. And I think it's gonna change in a couple, 2 or 3 years, when if you go to the ABS, the automatic ball strike syndrome, that stealing pitches is gonna be obsolete.
Right.
So you're gonna have to teach catchers to be a little more quiet behind the plate and probably catch the ball out front. And just catch the ball because the decision is going to be made for you.
That's great advice right there. You know, we were going to ask you what advice you would give to the kids aspiring to follow in your footsteps and make it to the big leagues as a catcher, which that was great advice you just gave right there as a catcher. What about the young ones who want to attend their first spring training, want to get the call up to the bigs one day? Any advice you'd give them?
Well, I would say, we've talked a little bit about it earlier today, is if you get a chance to put on a professional uniform, much less a major league uniform, you need to cherish that moment every day.
Yep.
I come down to a Braves Fantasy Camp. We have it in January. I'm here 2 weeks a year. I can't wait to come down to get into the locker room and put on a major league uniform. I just can't wait to do it every day. And I wear it until I go home and go to bed at night. It's just something that I've always cherished. For young kids, I would tell parents to have their kids try to play as many positions growing up as they possibly can.
Sure.
Learn as many different positions. I think pitching and catching is probably faster avenues to higher level play, but learn every position that you possibly can. And I think it's one other thing that kids and parents have to understand too. This game has a lot of built-in disappointment in it. There's a lot of individual failure at the plate. You know, of course, everybody said, you know, if you're going to fail 7 out of 10 times and still hit 300, and you're going to be one of the best hitters in the league.
Sure.
So be mindful that there's some built-in failure in the game. But you have to have a short memory. Forget that play.
Yeah.
Forget that miscue, that bad hop or that strikeout, and get on to the next play. And I tell kids, even if you feel you're not the most talented kid, I tell all the youngsters that try to do something, one or two things, during that game that helps your team win. Is it backing up a base? Is it making a throw home to get a guy out? Is it drawing a walk? Is it being a good base runner? Is it taking the extra base? Do something, one or two things in that game, if you feel that, you know, you're not hitting that day or it's not your day, to help your team win the game.
Being a good teammate and resiliency.
That's right, no doubt about it. And being a good teammate, and like I said, have a short memory and go on and play the next play as hard as you can.
That's right. Well, now we get to my favorite part where we ask people what their favorite concession item is. But also with Bruce Benedict, I think Braves fans everywhere would like to know, how do you take your eggs?
Oh, that's right. Well, when I was in Savannah in Double A, they had a big cheering section in Double A, and this section would stand up and say, do you like your eggs scrambled? And they would all yell, no. You like your eggs fried? And they have no. And then by the end, they would say, do you like your eggs Benedict? And then the whole place would, you know, jump
erupt
up and start
and cheer.
Erupt and cheer. But I like eggs in any fashion.
Okay, me too.
Quite frankly, I take them in any fashion, probably over medium on sourdough toast. It's probably my favorite thing, you know, to have eggs. But I can have eggs in under any condition, cooked any way. I'd love them. Love them to death.
And what about a ballpark concession item? What was the go-to?
Ballpark concession items. Well, it depends on what ballpark you're at.
Okay.
Depends what ballpark. If you went to Wrigley Field or, you know, Dodger Stadium, obviously they have Dodger dogs.
Dodger dogs.
You go to Wrigley, you got to try the Wrigley dogs that they have there. When I went to scouting in the minor leagues, I went to Erie, Pennsylvania. I think that's it was at the time a Pittsburgh franchise, and I always ask them, what's the best concession item? No matter where I go, I go, what's your favorite? What town? What's your best concession item? And in Erie, it was the Erie cheeseburger. They had a name for it or whatever. It's one of the best things I've ever eaten in my life. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of great places in that have, you know, great barbecue. Obviously, they have different options now for sushi. Ballparks have garlic fries now in San Francisco.
San Francisco,
a lot of garlic fries there.
The whole park
you can smell
like
them about two or three blocks away. Before you're even there, you can smell them. So there are a lot more options now.
That is fantastic, thorough answer. I really appreciate that. You're absolutely right.
That's great.
And last question, how are you enjoying retirement?
Well, I just retired in October, so I'm kind of figuring out my time. But I like the fact that when I get up in the morning, my day is not totally planned out for me, where I have to get up and go to breakfast, then I've got to start working on my computer, putting reports, and then you go to lunch, and maybe you rest for a little bit, and then work in the afternoon, and then go to the games at night. So I'm thankful for the part that's over.
Right.
But the Atlanta Braves organization has been very good to me as far as making some appearances, going to some clinics, going to some corporate outings, and helping out in that way, and going and meeting people who come to the Braves spring training facilities and the park in Atlanta to their corporate suites and season ticket holders or their A-listers and go and spend some time with them, because truly there are a number of great baseball fans out there and you never really get tired of spending your time with them.
Mr. Benedict, thank you for being a great Atlanta Brave on and off the field. Thank you for making some time for us today here at the Braves Beach House Podcast. We've got a Braves Beach House Podcast t-shirt coming your way. I might even get a signature on my Bruce Benedict signature baseball card here. What do you say?
Well, I'm happy to do it. Anyway, thank you very much. It's a beautiful day, so thank thank you all for having me today.
Will you say a big go Braves with me?
Yeah, all right, on 2, 3.
Go Braves!
Well, that sure was a great interview. It's always fun to see who stops by the Braves Beach House podcast. We'll have more alumni interviews and interviews with people from player development as we progress through the summer here. But it is the summer, and that means free summertime fun has returned to Koolidae Park with the Florida Complex League Braves season. We got games over the next 2 weeks, highlighted by our Tito's Tailwagon Tuesday game on May 13th against the FCL Orioles. That is a 6:05 p.m. start. There'll be a pregame pup parade around the warning track, so be sure to come out to the ballpark over the next couple of weeks here for our Florida Complex League Braves. They're just getting started. Also, while we're talking about the next couple of weeks, our podcast for the summer and through the fall will be 2 episodes a month. So you might not see us as frequently as you had in the past, but we still have tons of great content for you along the way. Coming up at the ballpark, we got live music this weekend on Friday and Saturday from 5:30 to 8:30 at the Superior Pools Tomahawk Tiki Bar and Grill, as well as on Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m. Trivia night is on Wednesdays, as always, and music bingo is even more popular than it's ever been on Thursdays at 6 p.m. So make sure you show up early and get ready for 4 rounds of music bingo fun. Also, tickets are on sale for our monthly facility tour, which is on the last Tuesday of every month, as well as for the Venice Symphony Patriotic Pops concert here that's happening on Memorial Day weekend. All that information can be found on coolidaypark.com. Well, that's going to do it for us this week on the Braves Beach House podcast. We will be back on May 20th. It's the return of Slicer on the Street. Slicer is going to be catching up with fans here at some FCL games, including Tailwagon Tuesday, and much more fun in store on our May 20th episode of the Braves Beach House podcast. Until next time, be loud and say proud. Let's go, Braves.